With our special guest tonight, Brian Horton, we're going to take your phone calls, maybe your stories about ghosts, next on Coast to Coast AM. Brian, in your work investigation, have you been to a spot, a location where you could just feel something, that something was there? That ever happened?
Not really, no. I mean, I think there's a place called, an ancient place called Avery, which is about 20 miles north of Stonehenge, which is an ancient stone circle going back about 4,000 or 5,000 years. That does have an atmosphere, but unfortunately most places, especially monuments, are so full of tourists that I don't really, I find it very difficult to get an atmosphere. Maybe I'm just not that psychic or whatever, but I've very rarely felt an atmosphere at places, to be honest.
Have you gone out with special equipment to try to record EVP sounds, for example?
No, that's not really what I do. I'm more of, a historical approach to it. I don't investigate.
Okay, let's go to some of the calls for you. Let's go to Powers Lake, North Dakota. Eric, east of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hey, Eric.
Hi, good to speak with you.
Good day.
I was wondering if Mr. Brian Horton knew anything about St. Cuthbert, who was buried in Durham University. Actually, in the cathedral across from the school. I went to school there for a long time ago, and it was so interesting that they took his body and rode for hundreds of miles over a period of time, and finally decided that they would bury him there. But when they poured out the water from where he was cleansed, grass would grow. And it was amazing because 100 years later, they dug him up again just to see, and he was incorruptible, they said. His body was still in good shape. You know?
No change at all. Huh?
Yeah. And I was fascinated about this. Of course, this is my first year in college, you know, and Dr. or Mr. Horton know anything about St. Cuthbert?
I'm not sure. Brian?
Not very much. I know he was connected with Lindisfarne, this monastery in the east of England. But I have heard stories of his body being incorruptible, which you do have quite a few stories about saints whose bodies were incorruptible. I think on a lot of occasions it's used to show how holy they were, and the source for the story is usually a church writer. But there is quite a few stories of incorruptible bodies of saints, and I think there's a church in Dublin in Ireland where they have, I can't remember the name of the church, it's in the centre of Dublin, where they have some of the priests there, and their bodies are totally preserved, very well preserved there. In reality, you can see them. So that's quite an interesting topic, actually.
When you do your research for these stories, these supernatural stories, what does that involve?
Well, it usually involves first looking, finding a reference to a story that sounds interesting, and then I usually check in folklore journals to see if there is a kind of a motif, a folklore motif that fits this story. And what often happens, and this is kind of another aspect of ghosts that's not really pursued much, is that if you say you have, in England they have a lot of these regional hauntings books, so you have the ghosts of London, the ghosts of Birmingham, etc., is look in the equivalent book, usually from the last century, which might be the folklore of Birmingham, the folklore of London. And it's surprising how many of the stories are exactly the same. So I usually, the first port of call is to see if there's a folk story with the same story as the ghost story. And there's not always, but very often there is. And sometimes I contact libraries, record offices, etc. And I go on from there, really.
Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line in Georgia. Jeremiah, Hey, Jeremiah. Go ahead, Hello? Jeremiah. Yeah.
Oh, yes. About 5 years ago, I was just got out of high school and stuff like that, and me and my friend were hanging out 2:30 in the morning. We had to, always had a thing about graveyards, go mess around graveyard and stuff, which now I was probably not that smart, but we were headed down there, and it was about 2:30 in the morning. I had my camera, and to get through this, you had to go through a little patch of woods and through the graveyard to get the graveyard to a park. Now, it wasn't a real entrance. It was a cut hole where they were doing construction. So me and my friend went over there, got there, and probably went in there recording. And my friend said, "What was that?" And it was like a howl. But I didn't think it was a howl. I thought it was a truck. So we ended up leaving right through there. So we had that feeling, that really creepy feeling that something was there. And so we were like, and so I went back at the camera. I went to go look at it, and it was off. Like, my camera turned off. I didn't turn it off. And it wasn't dead. It wasn't dead yet. So I went back, I would see him, and we came back through after I said the camera wasn't on. So I went back to get more photo of it, and I turned it back on and recorded it. And as soon as I turned it back on, something growled, like a dog, like a deep growl. And, like, we didn't stop to stare around. There's nowhere for it to hide or anything. And that's why I was just like, what was that? So we wouldn't like stop and stare or anything, but there's nowhere for any kind of animal to hide. It wasn't like bushes or anything. So we turned around and ran back down. So I was just wondering like what that was really about. Or
do you get a lot of animal hauntings, Brian?
There are a lot, yeah. There are an awful lot of animal hauntings, and they really divide into a couple of categories. The main one is people's pets who have died and they still see them around the house, or usually a little dog or a cat. The other topic I covered in my book was black dogs, which is it's not only in England but the States and other countries, which is basically huge black dogs, often with red glowing eyes, which
yes.
There are a lot of reports on certain roads. Usually they're connected with a certain path or a certain road. Sometimes they're seen to go and trot alongside a person as if they're kind of guarding the way along a certain stretch of road. Other times they're more fearsome and more scary, and have all sorts of connections with a death omen, or possibly a personification of sometimes a person. So a person came back as a black dog for some reason. So this is one of my favorite kinds of ghost is the black dog, because it goes back so far, probably to perhaps German folklore or something like that, where you have these packs of wild dogs. Usually they're not reported that often now, but they're kind of mixed in now with kind of cryptozoology and unknown animals. They used to be a totally separate thing, but now you have, whether they're escaped animals or whatever, you have these pumas and various things reported in England. And this kind of includes the black dog now, where really it was a separate entity in itself, say 50 years, 100 years ago. So a bit scary, the black dog, but interesting.
Are they always associated with evil, Brian?
Not always. They often are, and I know there was the most famous account of black dogs is one from I think it's from Suffolk in England, where the dog burst into a church and basically tore the place apart and killed a few people, apparently. So that's evil associated with that. But as I mentioned, a black dog could appear and guide a person down a road at night, a lonely road, as if they're protecting them from something, or as if they're showing them the way. So I think the kind of black dog or the dog that's reported reflects the concerns of whoever's written the report down, and it changes from being totally evil to being a very helpful spirit.
All right, next up, we go to Dallas, Texas. Hey, KJ, take it away.
Hello. I heard you saying you thought there wasn't any serious investigation into ghosts, and I wanted to tell you that back in the late 60s and early 70s, I was working at Stanford Research Institute in Menlo Park, California, and I worked in poltergeist research, totally all ghost research. The leaders of it were all physicists, famous physicists too. And that program, when I joined it, I asked how long it had been in existence, and they said 50 years. And one of the reasons they were the government think tank, that's a Republican, Stanford is a Republican university, that think tank was interested in ghost research was because it was during the, and they wanted to know if the Russians were able to get into our secrets, and there was all kinds of evidence that they could. One of the most interesting things that I worked on was a man that was an employee of Stanford University, a simple man, but he had studied the Rosicrucian philosophy, and he could dematerialize. And they had all the police chiefs of the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, they had them all standing around in a circle, and I worked on this, and he would dematerialized before their eyes. They were in a circle.
Did you see this happen?
Yeah. And one of the things that happened was he would say, you see the Hoover Tower? And he would appear on the Hoover Tower and be gone from within the circle. Then he talked to, I can't remember now if it was the police chief of Alameda or Oakland, but he said, who's it sitting in your chair and in your office? And the chief of police said, nobody. So he said, I want you to call your secretary. And he called his secretary, and he said, who's sitting in my chair? And she said, nobody, of course. And then the guy dematerialized before their eyes and was sitting in his chair, and she went quite hysterical. And it was very, very incredible.
You ever come across something like that, Brian? That's amazing.
No, I haven't. Is there any film of this?
I'm sure there is, but how come they never release stuff like that to the public? I'd love to see that, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I'd love a film of a man dematerializing. It'd be fascinating, yeah.
Carla in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Go ahead, Carla.
Yeah, when I was about 6.5 years old, I woke up in the middle of the night, must have been 2-3 o'clock, and looked toward my window. And what it appeared to be a chicken was pinning my curtains together. And I was just paralyzed with fear. I could not move. I could not breathe. I ended up going to sleep finally after about 20 minutes. And I woke up the next morning and I asked my mother, I said, Mom, did you come into my room and pin my curtains shut? Because they were pinned shut when I woke up. And she said, no. And I said, okay. I said, then there was a chicken in my room pinning my curtains shut.
A ghost chicken.
A ghost chicken. How about that? Let's go to Danny in California. Hey, Danny, take it away.
Hi, George and Brian.
Hi.
I had an interesting thing happen in Fort Lewis Base, Washington. There was a shadow person, and there was nobody casting a shadow, so it was like a two-dimensional being. And I'm wondering if it, like the parapsychology about it, I've heard people can project that type of image. Because I was thinking about a man tiptoeing, and this shadow figure lasted 5 seconds. It wasn't a like a vision out the corner of my eye. It lasted quite a while walking across the wall, tiptoeing. And I was picturing a man tiptoeing like that a day before. And I was wondering also, like the lady who was calling from Stanford, the mathematical part of it, because I've seen light, which I believe is supernatural, just from seeing it with witnesses in a circular form, and I've also seen a form of a man or a shadow person, and I've also seen, like you said, the dogs have red eyes. I've seen two beady green eyes, no more than 2 feet tall, and that's all I saw were the eyes, And I was wondering if you, we were talking about folklore, if you've heard anything about light and shadow people or the color green eyes or of anything like that. That's all just right. My question.
Okay, thank you, Danny.
Thank you.
Brian?
I haven't really, I know of shadow people really from reading on the internet. I don't recall any folklore specific to shadow people. The green eyes, as I said earlier about black dogs, there are occasions where you have giant green dogs and connected with fairies. So in Ireland, you have giant green dogs. Not with green eyes, I don't think, but connected with fairy lore. That's the only thing I've heard of where the colour green comes into it. So you have these giant green shaggy dogs that are supposed to be the dogs of the fairies. But no, I haven't come across folklore or any stories about shadow people, no.
Brian, did you ever investigate the leprechauns?
No, not specifically. Although a lot of Irish fairy lore, and there's quite a lot that comes into the book because there's a lot of connections with the headless horseman, a creature called the Dullahan in Irish folklore, and there are a lot of Irish fairy stories which are very similar to ghost stories. The leprechaun, another aspect of it, not specifically, but Irish fairies definitely have a lot of connection with folklore and ghost lore.
Is the headless horseman called Ichabod Crane in your neck of the woods as it is here?
No, because I know that Washington Irving story, although I think that book actually, he was living in my hometown, which is Birmingham in England, when he wrote that book. Although I think it's an amalgam of all sorts of German folklore and stories from where Washington Irving lived. But it's just the headless horseman. I think it's, I guess in the States, it's responsible for most tales of headless ghosts. I think it was its early 19th century, I think, the headless horseman that Washington Irving wrote. But no, it's just the plain old headless horseman in the UK. And in Greece, here in Greece, you don't have the story at all.
You know, it's interesting, probably that he may have stolen the story from the UK.
I think it's possible, or German folklore. I think he travelled all around Europe, and also back in the States where he lived, there are a lot of Dutch immigrants as well. So there's a lot of influences on him, and also this headless ghost. It goes back to some tales of King Arthur, about 1,000 years old. So it's got it goes well into the past, and I think Washington Irving, on his travels, he could have picked up lots of stories because there are lots of headless ghosts in folklore.
Well, I tell you what, those stories fascinate me. Ever since I was a kid, the headless horseman story just captivated me, Brian.
Yeah, it is, and I think it makes a fantastic image. It's a bit of a scary image, and it's the one on the cover of Law of the Ghost, actually, where you have the headless horseman with his,
that's scary.
That's scary, with his horse rearing up and his head.
Yeah, and the horse has red eyes.
The horse has red eyes. It's a great image, and I think you only need to hear a short description of that, and it's in your mind. It's painted in your imagination, you know, especially, and there's a lot of tales where people would only hear the sound of hooves at night and immediately say that's
gosh.
The headless horseman.
We'll be back with more stories in a moment. We'll have open lines next hour, and we'll open up a special hotline for those of you in the middle of these Los Angeles wildfires so that you can check in with us or perhaps pass on more information. Back in a moment with Brian Horton and the rest of your calls on Ghosts on Coast to Coast AM. Brian, tell me about the extraordinary accounts of the phantom battles and armies seen in the sky. That's kind of neat.
Yeah. This, again, it really happens. It's a worldwide phenomenon, this is. And basically what you have is people who report seeing men, horses, guns, everything, like a battle
taking place, and often in the sky above the battlefield where the original battle took place. It goes back, there are stories in the Bible of kind of phantom battles, and there's a Greek story from the 2nd century AD by a Greek writer called Pausanias, who is describing villages living near the plain of Marathon, which is north of Athens, where the Athenians had defeated the Persians in about 490 BC. And he says that every night, and this is hundreds of years after the battle, you could hear the noise of the battle, the horses and men fighting. He doesn't say if you could see anything, but you could hear it. And this description really sums up phantom battles for the next 2,000 years. So, yeah, basically what it is people who report hearing the noise of battle, or on occasion seeing phantom soldiers fighting as if the battle was still going on.
Okay, next up, let's go to our west of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to relay the story that you're on. Yes, was talking about.
Sure.
Well, it's about a black dog, and I've seen it. You know, I was sitting in, you know, the front of the car with my friend, and we were driving at midnight, and we just, you know, I looked around and I saw this man dressed in black, and he had a black dog with him, and I turned around. He went, you know, they crossed in the back of the car. But when they crossed, they didn't have any feet. The man didn't have feet. The dog didn't have any feet. And it was totally a ghost. And also my friend said that, you know, she had a job at night where she would get out at midnight. And in the same street, she was trying to cross to go home. But, you know, somebody got in front of her car. It was some people. And also she noticed that, you know, the people that were getting in front of her after, you know, she stopped, that they didn't have any legs at all. They were just ghosts, you know, just getting in front of the car.
Red eyes for the dog, by the way?
No, I didn't get to see the eyes. I was going to say that. But I did see he was a black, big black dog alongside a man dressed all in black. But it wasn't a shadow person because I could see he had a white face and black hair.
All right. Brian, you know, remember the movie The Omen, Brian?
Yeah, yeah.
That was a Rottweiler, wasn't it? That dog?
I can't remember that. I don't remember the species.
I think it was. I mean, tough breed. It was a Rottweiler. Yeah. But,
had that spooky story, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, sure was. Lori in Cocoa Beach, Florida. Hey, Lori, how are you?
Hi, I'm okay. How are you, George?
Good.
How are you, Brian?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, it's a pleasure to speak with both of you. I'm a little bit anxious, so bear with me.
Okay.
First of all, ever since I was about 5 years old, I've been very perceptive and a bit psychic. I saw my first apparition at five, and it was frightening, to say the least. I won't ever forget it. But what recently happened, which was very odd, was about a week ago. I haven't been sleeping at all. And thank you for keeping me, company at night.
Of course. That's our job, Lori.
I really appreciate it. I finally found a radio show that I can relate to. But what I wanted to say was a wild hawk, landed on our deck. And we have animals, and they're going a bit crazy at the time. And I walked outside the door, and I came near it, and it would let me come near it and walk around it and almost touch it. And I found it very peculiar, and it did not want to leave. And I kept saying to my husband, this is very strange, you know. And my animals calmed down, and they would just look at each other. And I just wondered in folklore what this meant. This wild hawk. And also, I was wondering, Brian, if you had heard of the Carlsberg diaries that were found in Germany. Do you know anything about those diaries?
No, I've never heard of them, I'm afraid.
Well, they were found in a castle in Germany, and it was during the Dark Ages. And they spoke about these creatures, that spiders as big as big as houses, as big as a garage of a house, and talons. They also found talons from, they believe, you know, dragons. And I, you know, I was just curious if you heard anything about this. So those were my two main questions.
The hawk and the other one. Okay, I don't think he knows much about the diaries, but what about hawks in ghost stories?
Well, usually birds in general, especially like the hawk and birds like that, are often connected with families. And again, it's not a very positive connection, but there can be an omen for families, that sometimes a death omen, but usually there's a certain kind of bird connected with, usually in England, old families, and it would appear sometimes at the time of the death of one of the members of the family, sometimes when something important was going to happen. So the only connection that I have in folklore with birds and stories is that it's connected with usually ancient families and would appear just outside their house, flying around outside their house.
That's unusual.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
My family does go back many generations, many generations from Wales and also from Ireland and Scotland.
Oh.
So that's
interesting. Oh, wow.
Yes. All the way back to the Assyrians, we can even trace our family history. This is a fascinating show tonight. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, make sure you're listening on Halloween night, Lori, all right? Because you're going to get some treats there. East of the Rockies, South Carolina, Charles. Take it away, Charles.
Hey, George, Brian. Hey. It's a privilege to be able to speak with you today.
Hi.
Thanks.
Brian, my question for you has to do with the folklore of ghosts as it relates to like rules of their behavior. Because years ago, I heard that, you know, ghosts can't cross water. And the reason I ask this is, how would that relate to, like, say, a ghost that was haunting a ship or a vessel at sea?
I think I'm not sure how it relates to a vessel at sea, but the not crossing water part is a very big part of ghost lore, because I think, as with lots of supernatural creatures, they're always or often witnessed on roads, at rivers, kind of the border, at border places, liminal places. So why ghosts don't cross water, it's kind of they're crossing from one kind of existence into another, figuratively speaking. So a lot of creatures, supernatural creatures, not just ghosts, are witnessed in these liminal places, rivers, streams, hedges. And it's as if it's kind of to illustrate the border between perhaps the natural and the supernatural. That's where the ghost not crossing water comes into it. As far as this not applying at sea, I'm really not sure. I think there must be different rules for ghosts witnessed at sea, and maybe something else acts as the border there. But I'm really not sure.
Next up, Roseanne in Union City, California. You're on with Brian Horton.
Oh, it's a great honor to speak to you, George, and listening to you, Brian. I really like to share this with you. Back in 2001, this happened in South Hayward, California. It was like a Tuesday, a late morning, almost noon. I was working in my office, and all of a sudden, I saw these streams of like red and orange and pink, like light, you know, like shining light. And eventually what happened was there was this figure that jumped in from a diagonal upward, downward. It was very graceful. It was like a warrior, like a Native American warrior. And what happened, he turned around, he had a spear, and the way he turned his spear, it looked like had like rays, thin rays of that color I was telling you, of light. And I could tell you exactly what his headdress, it had like a very long fibers past his shoulders. He had ribbons, like a ribbon armbands with the long fringe. And he had, like, leggings with long fringe. And he had full body with the feet and footings. And he had the black markings around his eyes. And it was, everything was sore throat. And then I guess he went to this one physician, like, was facing me. He actually, he leaped with his spear, and he jumped over my head. I couldn't believe what I saw. It was the most, it was scary, but yet beautiful. And then, I don't know what that could have been, a sign, or maybe there was hunting grounds in the area a long time ago, or maybe it was a message. And I don't know, especially the black markings. I couldn't see the eyes, but I saw the black markings.
That's,
and then I've been
story.
Looking through books and everything, trying to find this, you know, like, this kind of image. I couldn't find it. So I just want to share this with you.
Where can people go to look for old stories and old books for drawings and things, Brian? Is there any sources out there?
I think, as I mentioned earlier, a good source are regional folklore books. And I know they have them in England. I'm not familiar. I mean, they must have them in the UK and in the States as well, where you have, maybe by state, the folklore of New York State or wherever. So they're a great source for stories. And often, you know, they have very old stories, and they have the origin sometimes of the story. So that would be my first port of call, or folklore journals as well. They'd be the, you know, there's, I know there's a California folklore and journals like that. They'd be the best sources, I would say.
Let's go to Rockville, Maryland. Jacob, take it away. Hey, Jacob.
Hey, George. Hey, Brian.
Hi.
Are you familiar with Michio Ikaku?
Michio Kaku, he's a physicist, Brian. Michio,
right,
Kaku.
I know. I read a book by him. He talked about different dimensions and alternate universes and the M theory. I'm wondering if you think that ghosts possibly come from another dimension.
It's one of the theories that's been put forward. I don't really know. I mean, it's because there's no proof of another dimension, it's hard to use it as... you know, as a possible source of ghosts. I know it's one that's put forward, but it's really difficult, unless we know that it exists, to use it. It's kind of using one unexplained thing to explain another unexplained thing, I think.
Okay, thanks. Rob, Albany, Oregon. Go ahead, Robbie.
Hey, it's good to talk to you again. It was about almost 2 years ago exactly. My cousin and I, we were driving around really late at night near our hometown here, and it was the night of a thunderstorm. Well, we saw this dog, a rather large dog, standing on the street corner of the major highway there going through town, and we had to stop for the light, and this dog waited for the light, across the crosswalk. As we were looking at it, it had fur. It looked like an unshaved llama, just really long fur. It turned and looked at us. The face was almost the exact face of a wolf, but it looked like it had no eyes. Its eyes were just completely black, and it was just the creepiest thing we've ever seen. I don't know if you've heard anything like that.
Interesting myth, folklore story, Brian.
Yeah, it's the black dogs again, and they are described as being large with shaggy fur. It sounds almost like an archetypal black dog, apart from the red eyes, really. That's interesting.
United Kingdom has a history behind it in terms of hauntings, doesn't it?
It
much
does,
more,
yeah.
Much more than most places.
It does, and when I've been teaching English here in Greece, students have said, "Oh, England, that's the, you know, they're not very frightened. They're a bit wary because of they're aware of the reputation for ghosts that we have." And I'm not sure there's an explanation. comparing it with here in Greece, a bright sunny place, and England is quite cloudy and dark, I think that could be something to do with it. It's kind of not exactly the London fog of Sherlock Holmes nowadays, but it is quite a misty, cloudy place, and you know, it contrasts with here, certainly, with the bright blue, the blue sky and the sunshine in Greece, where you don't really have too many ghost stories. So I think that could have something to do with it, the atmosphere, the weather itself. And I guess the history, it's a country that's, England hasn't been invaded since the Normans, so it's got 1,000 years of pretty much uninterrupted history where stories can be preserved for that long. Those two things, I think, contribute a lot to why England has so many ghost stories. People have said it has a violent history, and there's been civil war and wars, but I think every country has this. So I can't see how the violence in the history is any more than any other country, so I don't know why that would explain it. But certainly the uninterrupted history and the kind of misty atmosphere helps.
Let's go to Houston. Roger, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Roger.
Hi, George. This is Roger. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
First-time caller, long-time listener.
Well, thank you.
In 1975, I was just out of the Army, and I was going to graduate school. I was working with a police department in a small town in Mississippi. I was working the graveyard shift each 5 nights a week. We had a thunderstorm come through. As the thunderstorm was coming through, now we were in central Mississippi, we no longer were able to have car-to-car radio communications. The electromagnetic system was fouled up in some way, and we had to relay our calls to our base station through Fort Lauderdale, Florida. As the front passed through successfully, and we were on the other side of this cold front and raining that came down, we had to relay our calls through a small town in Colorado. But that's not the story that I wanted to tell you. I wanted to relate the electromagnetic phenomenal aspect of it.
What happened was,
not just a few minutes after the storm passed through, we saw this light in the sky that looked like maybe 200 feet above the highway. And there was a small state highway there that passed through the edge of town. And myself and another patrolman in another patrol car saw this light, and it was moving at about 30 miles an hour as far as we could tell.
I want you to hold right there and come back and tell me the rest of the story, Roger, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. The book, Lore of the Ghost, with Brian Horton. We'll be back with open lines and also that hotline for those of you in the wildfires in Los Angeles. That number is 818-817-0021.